Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So continuing our reading from the fifth chapter of the seventh canto entitled Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu, text number 10. Buddhi bedak parakrita utaho te swato bhavat vanyatang shrotu kamanang guru nang kula nandana buddhi bedak parakrita utaho te swato bhavat Vanyatang shrotu kamanang Guru nang kulanandana Buddhi vedak parakrita Utaho te swato bhavat Vanyatang shrotu kamanang Guru Nang Kula Nandana. Ladies, please. Uribeiraha, pollution of the intelligence. Parakritaha, done by the enemies. Utaho, or te, of you. Swataha, by yourself. Abhavat, was. Panyatang, let it be told. Shrotu kamanam, to us who are very eager to hear about it. Guru Nam, all your teachers, Kula Nandana, O best of your family. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O best of your family, has this pollution of your intelligence been brought about by you or by the enemies? We are all your teachers and are very eager to hear about this. Please tell us the truth. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj's teachers were astonished that a small boy could speak such exalted Vaishnava philosophy. Therefore, they inquired about the Vaishnavas who stealthily taught it to him, in order that these Vaishnavas might be arrested and killed in the presence of Prahlad's father, Hiranyakashipu. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Agnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Budhale Shimate Prahlad Nanda Swami Tone. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Budhale Shimate Bhakti Pradhan Swami Tone. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Prarne. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Adi Shatarne. So I always like reading and hearing about and talking about these sections dealing with Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj, because it takes these very basic desires that all of us here in the material world have and blow them up to such a large proportion that it makes it very obvious what the ultimate conclusion of material striving will bring. So here we have Hiranyakashipu, and he's effectively conquered the entire universe. He's in charge of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems. All the demigods tremble even to the slightest little wiggle of his eyebrows. He has all the money in the whole universe. He has all the women. He has everything. But yet he's still unsatisfied. So it's just really nice to meditate on how in our own pursuit or our own pushings of material desires try to tempt us into pursuing them to their fullest. It's just nice to remember here Hiranyakashipu's example. Even if we do attain our material desires, even if we do get as Hiranyakashipu's name implies, soft cushions and gold for the purpose of enjoying the senses, it's not going to bring us any actual happiness. It's simply going to bring us misery, anxiety, and suffering. Look at Hiranyakashipu. He's terrified of his son. He has everything, and yet he's terrified of his son. Why? Because he's always afraid that his position will be compromised, that somebody else will become the supreme controller, that somebody else will take over his position. Anything that we can acquire in this material world is always subject to being lost. So that's why it's so important to really follow this example being set by his wonderful son, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad saw these defects in Hiranyakashipu, and he was just blatantly pointing it out to him, saying, not even calling him father, saying, oh, best of the demons. Just telling him to his face exactly what he is and exactly what he's all about and where he's going to go. Oh, best of the demons, these different desires that you're pursuing is simply going to lead you into a deep, dark well of material ignorance. So Hiranyakashipu was very disturbed by this, and he ordered his the Gurukul teachers to inquire from Prahlad where he was getting this information from. And the teachers wanted to go about it nicely at first so that Prahlad would tell the truth, so he wouldn't be scared into lying. But yet their very question betrays their misunderstanding. Just like in the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, when Dhritarashtra is inquiring from Sanjay. Dhritarashtra is asking, what are my sons and the sons of Pandu doing on the battlefield? From the very first question out of Dhritarashtra's mouth, he's betraying his polluted intelligence. Because both the Pandus and the sons of Dhritarashtra, they're both of the same family. They're both Kurus. But Dhritarashtra is making distinctions, saying, oh, my sons are the Kurus, and your sons are something else. I don't know what they are, but they're your sons. They're not part of my family of the Kurus. So in the same way here, these teachers of the Gurukul, they're showing their bewildered intelligence by saying, how has this pollution of your intelligence been brought about by you or by the enemies? Because these things that Prahlad Maharaj is saying, this is truth. It's not that truth is spoken by one party and not by the others. And also this whole pollution of intelligence, this is showing actually how when we don't engage in the practice of Krishna consciousness, our intelligence becomes polluted and bewildered by these modes of material nature. But for Prahlad, it's very easy. It reminds me of a verse that I spoke upon last night in the Bhagavad Gita class, chapter 8, text 14. Ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityashaha tasyaham sulabha parta nitya yuktasya yoginaha. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Prita, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. So this is Prahlad Maharaj. He's constantly engaged in the service of Vishnu. He has no thought for his own well-being, for his own material desires. And the purport for that text, Srila Prabhupada is explaining about how these different desires for jnana, karma, and yoga pollute our intelligence and they bewilder us. They drag us down into these modes of material nature, into these concepts of friends and enemies. Because ultimately what the whole idea of friends and enemies is about is that we have selfish interests. And we want to see the satisfaction of our own material desires. So therefore, anyone who assists me in the pursuit of my material desires is my friend, and anyone who hinders or gets in my way is my enemy. But by striving for these different things, it brings us nothing but misery. Whenever we become mixed with these different things. That's why Krishna says, who always remembers me without deviation, not being deviated by these other things. There are other flavors of bhakti. There's karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, yoga mishra bhakti. Mishra means mixed. And then there's kevala bhakti, or pure, unalloyed devotion. And that's what Prahlad has, and that's what we need to strive for also, because when our devotion is mixed, it brings mixed results. Yes, we do get some progress in Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, we're also watering weeds. And those weeds are going to choke our creeper of devotion. So another point on being nishkama is that being nishkama, being without material desires, without selfish interests, we don't see this distinction between friends and enemies. Because we see how Krishna is maintaining everyone and everything. Prabhupada gave the example many times about how the wild African elephants aren't concerned about their own maintenance, their own survival. At first, I didn't really understand why Prabhupada would use this as an example. So I actually did the research. I actually looked up how much a wild African elephant eats every single day. It's incredible. Does anyone know? Any ideas? Guesses? Yeah, that's right. 700 pounds. Every single day. Could you imagine eating 700 pounds of food every day? That's inconceivable. And yet there's thousands of wild elephants in Africa, each eating 700 pounds of food every day. And they're not caring where their next meal is going to come from. They're not in anxiety. Oh my God, where am I going to secure my 700 pounds of food for tomorrow? They're not concerned about that. They're just living their life. Because Krishna is supplying the foodstuffs, Krishna is supplying the necessities for everyone, for all living entities. And so when we can recognize this, all of a sudden all of our anxiety evaporates. Because our basic necessities will be provided for. And this is a very essential concept to grasp in Krishna consciousness. Because until we really understand this, we cannot surrender to Krishna. It's impossible. As long as we think that I'm the one maintaining myself, I'm providing this necessities for existence, I'm supporting myself, I'm providing for my family, I'm the doer, I'm doing everything, and if I don't do it, nobody will. As long as we have this mentality, we can never surrender to Krishna. It's impossible. So that's why it really takes some understanding. It takes some purification of our intelligence. That's why it's so important to read these shastras. Krishna even mentions in the Bhagavad Gita about purification of the intelligence. Simply reading the shastras purifies the intelligence. Because these shastras provide the transcendental yardstick, so to speak. It provides the measurement by which everything else is compared. So if we use something material as the measurement by which we compare everything else, naturally everything will be relative. Because that very thing that we're using as the standard, that very thing is also relative. So therefore, nothing that we do will have any permanent standing. Therefore, we have to take something transcendental, something that's permanent, something that's actually existential, something that's extant, and then use that as the standard by which we measure everything else. For instance, in the material world, they may falsely teach us that a snake is a rope. And so with that polluted information, our intelligence uses that polluted information and passes it along to the mind. And then the mind, through its process of accepting and rejecting, when it sees a snake, it thinks, oh, here's a rope, it's beneficial for me, let me accept it. And so when we reach out to touch it, this rope actually bites us because it's really a snake and we get poisoned. So that's the nature here. These teachers of the Gurukul, they're teaching the students false information. And based upon this false information, people make false decisions, and they get further entangled in this material energy. They get poisoned by the modes of material nature. But when we learn from the Shastras, we learn that this snake is actually a snake, and therefore it's not good. Let me reject it. Our intelligence becomes purified. And with purified intelligence, we can make proper decisions that will be in our actual best interest. But even if we don't have this intelligence, even if we at least have the strong desire to please Krishna, Krishna will give us the intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, 10:10, Tesham satata yukta nam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to me with love, to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So this is very important. We have to be constantly devoted to serving Krishna with love. It doesn't require great intelligence. It doesn't require a great amount of know-how. It's very simple. We simply have to engage in the process, which means physically putting our body in motion and following basic principles. So the basic principles, the foundation upon which Krishna consciousness and spiritual life is founded, is following the four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, and no intoxication, and chanting 16 rounds every day. If we fail to observe this foundation, it's like trying to build a castle in the sand. The foundation will simply be washed away. And what happens when the foundation of something is eroded? The whole building cracks and crumbles. So trying to build our spiritual life on top of a shaky foundation is an impossible situation. Prabhupada has actually spoken at length about this subject in many different places, going so far as to say there's no question of spiritual life if we do not follow the principles. And also saying in other places that if we cannot follow the principles, it's better that we never even take initiation in the first place, because it's so offensive to make a vow and to break it. Prabhupada's saying that that's the difference between animals and humans. Animals are not capable of following vows, of making a vow and following it. Human beings are. So when we take these vows before Guru, Krishna, and the sacred fire, we seriously need to follow these. We seriously need to try to the best of our ability to uphold these vows that we've taken. It's very, very important. The very foundation of our spiritual life depends upon it. Everything that we've built depends upon it. And we can tangibly experience this also as we slack off in the sincerity of our chanting or the regularity of our reading. We can tangibly experience actually how our taste in Krishna consciousness fades. And as we reinvigorate our sincerity in chanting, as we bring back the regularity of our reading, we can tangibly, palpably experience the taste in Krishna consciousness return. That's why Prabhupada says in the purport to 10:10, he says a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, Krishna from within gives him instruction. so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. This is provided, of course, that we follow, that we have this basic foundation. This basic foundation is required. As long as we have this basic foundation of following simple principles, very simple principles, and chanting a very small number of rounds every day, then Krishna will actually give us everything we need. Prabhupada's actually gone so far as to say that if we simply follow the four regulative principles and chant our 16 rounds every day, you're guaranteed to go back to Godhead. That sounds amazing, and it's really profound. Even one time, I forget who it was, but one devotee was hearing about all these wonderful things that all these other disciples of Prabhupada were doing, preaching in the Middle East, risking their lives, going behind the Iron Curtain, distributing so many hundreds and thousands of books. And he was saying, Prabhupada, you know, I really want to, you know, do something big for you and Krishna. I really want to risk my life, put it all on the line. What can I do for you? And Prabhupada said, you can chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, and attend the full morning and evening programs. And the devotee was like, what? But Prabhupada, I want to risk my life. And Prabhupada said, follow the four principles, chant 16 rounds, and attend the morning and evening program. It sounds so simple, but yet it's such a heroic thing to do. This is real heroism. Heroism isn't being some macho guys, you know, standing up to the bully or being on the battlefield wielding a gun or a sword. That's not heroism. Real heroism is this very thing that Prabhupada said, chant your rounds, follow the principles, and go to the program. That's risking your life. And by doing this simple thing, you'll actually go back to Godhead. And that's what Prabhupada says later in this purport. Prabhupada says, the qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness, and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. That's all it takes. It doesn't take any advanced degrees, master's degree, PhD. It doesn't take any of this. It doesn't take any high-level understanding. It doesn't take any erudite scholarship, profound philosophical understanding. Although all of that's nice, but it's not required. All that's required is that we just simply engage in the process. And from that, everything else will come. Just like in that other verse from the Bhagavad Gita, 8:14. Such an amazing verse. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. In the purport there, Prabhupada says this really amazing thing right at the end. He says, a pure devotee cannot forget the Supreme Lord for a moment. And similarly, the Supreme Lord cannot forget his pure devotee for a moment. This is the great blessing of the Krishna conscious process of chanting the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Simply by chanting nice rounds, without consideration of friends and enemies, without consideration of my own maintenance, my own sustenance, my own satisfaction of my own petty material desires. Without any of these considerations, simply chant the Maha Mantra. Engage in service. Some service is needed. Volunteer for it enthusiastically. Yes, this is something that Krishna needs. Let me do this. rather than thinking, oh no, I can't do that because, you know, I have to satisfy this petty little material desire of mine. This really petty desire is so important, I can't engage in Krishna's service. When we have this mentality, we won't have access to this nectar, to this blissful transcendental taste in Krishna consciousness. We have to abandon these things. And just without any hesitation, without any reservation of my own maintenance, my own sustenance, the satisfaction of my own desires, rather think, what is it that Krishna needs? What is it that Krishna wants? What's necessary at this moment for me to do for Krishna? Even in the material world, they have this concept to a small degree. Who was it? I think John F. Kennedy said, don't ask what you can do or what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. In the same way, don't be asking, oh, what can you do for me, Krishna? How can you satisfy my desires? Instead, be asking, oh, my dear Krishna, how can I satisfy your desires? What is it that you need? What is it that's an emergency, that's essential right now that you need done? And without considering our own necessities, just do it for Krishna. And you won't be the loser. You'll never be the loser. You may be busting your butt all day long, sacrificing everything, only having maybe, you know, 2 bites to eat the whole day long. Materially, your body may be suffering, but spiritually, your heart is just so joyful, it's just bursting with spiritual pleasure. So on that note, I'll end class. If there's any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu? Is that a question, or are you just stretching? It's right behind you.
Hare Krishna. You quoted the purport of that 8:14 verse and said, Prabhupada said that jnana and karma and yoga may also pollute the intelligence. And that remembering Krishna without deviation is the most important thing. But there is a verse in the prayers offered by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of 10th canto, which I read a couple of weeks ago, in which he praises the yogis. And I was surprised. He says they go, after doing their duties, they go back to Godhead. Of course, that may, you know, he may be referring to a special kind of yogi in a nice age, like, you know, not Kali Yuga. Prabhupada usually said in Kali Yuga the yogis aren't doing the real thing, but there is this Shastric evidence that yoga is not a pollution.
Yeah, it really depends on what the motivation behind the yoga is. Prabhupada said in other places that people who engage in Ashtanga or Hatha Yoga mainly do it for power, out of a desire for power, to manipulate and lord their will over this material energy. Because by the process of mystic yoga, you can attain the Ashta Siddhis, which basically you can manipulate the material energy in any way you so desire, which is extremely bewildering. And it deviates one from the path of Krishna consciousness. But yes, yogis can go back to Godhead. Not necessarily to Krishna Loka, though. Some yogis go to reside with Karanadakashaya Vishnu in the causal ocean. And some are promoted to Vaikuntha Loka. But Krishna or Srila Prabhupada explains that only those who are dedicated to Krishna, that constantly meditate upon Krishna, can actually achieve Goloka Vrindavan. And Goloka Vrindavan can only be had when our bhakti is unalloyed by these other processes. So Vasuprabhu?
The process of yoga is very difficult to achieve. And the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that one doesn't have to have all those qualifications as you just mentioned previously. That all you need is sincerity. So this is how easy Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it. That even though there's a few people in society today that are very vigorous and eager to do that type of austerity or tapasya, but there's no guarantee that if they acquire their tapasya goal, that they'll go back to Godhead.
Yeah.
Whereas you mentioned there's a guarantee of going back home, back to Godhead by chanting Hare Krishna. So yes, their desire for power is material. And even if you're a devotee and you desire happiness and wealth and fruits, you still, if you approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you follow the process, you'll go back to Godhead. Even if you have all those particular desires.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You will achieve the goal. So I think that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness, what makes it so spectacular and so easy to acquire. Whereas yoga, it's a very limited person or persons that can actually acquire that goal. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, you can be, as you said, uneducated. You can be just a simple person. You can be a humble person. You can be a child even, for that matter. And you can achieve love of Godhead. And that's really the power and the beauty of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, that's a very, very nice point. Even in the Adi Lila first chapter, text 55 in the purport, Prabhupada says that by this one quality of sincerity, this one quality alone, and you'll eventually be elevated to the point where you can see Krishna face to face. This is a direct quote. Prabhupada says, face to face as one man sees another. Which is just mind-blowing if we can even wrap our mind around what that actually means. As I'm sitting here looking at you, you can actually look at Krishna and talk with him face to face just like that. It's incredible. Archita Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice presentation today. You were really fired up. I got to talk to you outside. Anyway, we're talking about yoga as if bhakti is something different. And there are certain classes of men who would like to draw that line that there's bhakti and then there's, oh, but there's real yoga. But bhakti is the culmination of the yoga ladder. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And Ashtanga yoga ends in samadhi. But what is that samadhi? It means fixing the mind on one point. And what is that one point? It's supposed to be Krishna.
Yeah.
Those who think they arrive at samadhi without Krishna, they're the ones that are bewildered. What are they meditating on? What are they fixed their minds on? So real yoga culminates in bhakti.
Yeah,
and
right.
Prabhupada said, but it's not that the other wrongs are overlooked by the bhakti yogis. Prabhupada pointed out in relation to the story of Dhritarashtra, self-immolation, you know, burning up his body in mystic fire, that previously, you know, any gentleman knew this process. Every gentleman knew how to perform hatha yoga and how to come to this point of where by his own desire he could self-immolate and burn his body and go and just leave the body and go to the next destination. So it's not that bhakti is devoid of any of these other things. Bhakti includes all that.
Yeah.
Bhakti is the culmination of all of that. So let's not keep talking about yoga as if it's something separate from bhakti.
Yeah, just like when Tatvavit Prabhu brought up the point earlier, he said that even Lord Brahma, he's glorifying this yoga process. That's why I just made the distinction that most people who engage in the Ashtanga process, if they're not doing it for health, like most people in modern days, they're just doing it for health. But if you're not doing it for health, then these different mystic yogis, most of them are doing it, or they get bewildered by, even if they're not intentionally, originally doing it for mystic cities. Eventually, as they progress in this mystic process, they acquire mystic cities. And then that acquisition bewilders them and they get deviated by that. But yes, bhakti yoga is yoga, and it is the topmost of all yoga systems.
And if you're going to quote Lord Brahma in the Padyavali, there's a verse, I forget the Sanskrit now, where it says that if somebody even thinks about chanting Hare Krishna, Lord Brahma breaks out the Madhuparka and worships that person.
Jai.
So.
All right. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.